to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, no thanks, Stocks and Giants. I'm Tom Howley's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. An interesting show today. We have Dr. Johnson, my buddy Mark Johnson calling in, psychologist. We have Mr. Jan Flanagan calling in. We have David Anelman talking about this wild market going up and how far is it going to go. David said a couple weeks ago he don't want to sell it, and I think he's probably right. I'm a couple spots that I got some calls that are in the money, not too bad, but I don't really need 200 points a day either. We'll eventually catch it, I guess, but crazy stuff. You know, the power of money just piling into the place, and we have a lot of sports to talk about, but Matty, we've talked a lot, and I know you don't. I'll talk about this more when the other dudes get on, but there's whenever you have a transaction, no matter what it is, you know, be it corn for milk or whatever it happens to be, or money for something, the valuation of the transaction could be the movement and the valuation of either side of what the person's come to the table. Do you have any idea what the hell I'm talking about? I'm saying the answer's probably no.
Based on the words you've said so far,
yeah.
No one does.
Yes, I would agree. When you go buy a stock, a car, loaf of bread, whatever it is, when you see the price of bread going up, or the price of a car going up, the price of stock going up, it could be that the value of the loaf of bread, the car, or the stock is getting higher, correct?
Could be
the value of what you're buying it with, meaning the dollar, is getting less.
Correct.
Nobody ever thinks of it that way, nor probably should you. But you can sit there today and you can say, wow, my XYZ stock is doubled over the last month. That's one possibility. Or we could be pouring so much money in the system that the value of the dollar is dropped. And at some point, I think people are going to realize that that's what's happening. I'd like to think that the reason why these stocks are going up is because the stocks are all of a sudden way more valuable than yesterday. Well, they are more valuable in relation to the dollar. Not so sure they are in relation to anything else. Because with the latest Fed move, we have some people talking about Morgan Stanley, I believe it was, that the stock could drop, the dollar could drop to 85 against the other currencies of the world. So if it does, is it really General Motors getting more valuable, or the dollar getting less? And which really means that's how you define inflation. And these guys are so convinced they have none, or they're kidding themselves. I look at it and I go, I can't believe we're going down this road again, but let's worry about that later. What about those Bears? What about the interesting game last night? Seems like the, as usual, halfway through the year when people get people back from injury and some people aren't going to get people back, these teams seem to change.
Well, yeah, health is a huge part of football, and especially in the NFL. And, when you play teams and they're very banged up, you can usually take advantage of them. And when guys get healthy, that's a big advantage for that team.
I thought these Eagles were totally out. Now they're out, and they aren't really.
No, the Eagles are very talented, and they had a ton of injuries, and they still have a few guys out, although they're starting to get some guys back. They got Sproles back and some other guys yesterday. And the Bears' offense was just abysmal in the first half. 9 yards in the first half, couldn't get anything going. 5 straight 3-and-outs to start the game, and the defense kept them in the game, and it was just 12-0 at halftime. And then the Eagles went down and scored and made it 19-0 in the third quarter. And I think a lot of people probably thought, okay, game over, turn the TVs off. And then all of a sudden, the offense found a rhythm and mixed in some run and some pass and knocked, connected on a couple of plays. And all of a sudden, it's 19-14, and they get a stop, and they have the ball, And, you know, they're driving down the field. They get a first down. And then on second and nine, they throw a screen pass to David Montgomery that looked to me like there was three blockers ahead of him. And if he makes one guy miss, he's gone. But at minimum, he's going to get like a 25-yard gain. I mean, it was a huge play and puts him right in field goal range, if not, you know, driving in to take the lead. He drops it, hits him in the hands, he drops it. Third and nine, they incomplete. Punt it away to the Eagles, and so now there's about 9 minutes left, and the Bears need to get a stop, and they just couldn't. The Eagles just ran the ball down their throat, went the whole length of the field, 91-yard drive, kicked a field goal to seal the game, and that was it. So it was just first half offense was the worst I've ever seen. 9 yards in a half. Second half, the offense was clicking, and the defense just couldn't get the stops they needed. And there you go. Now you're 3-5, and basically spiraling out of control.
Well, the Green Bay, who I thought had as good a defense I've seen this year,
their defense has gotten shredded like 5 weeks in a row.
Well, yesterday there were the plays at one point were like 65-40 or 42 or something, and I was calling the game the last who they were playing the Chargers, who yep. also got a couple people back. So they even look better. They look a lot better than when they played the Bears. And
the Bears dominated the Chargers and lost that game, which is a terrible loss.
But now it's a different. You know, they look different, and the guy goes, "Green Bay defense is tired. Watch this." He replayed. He goes, "No, nobody can hold their gap." He said they've been on the field like 25 more plays than the other guy's defense.
It's a big part of it.
It must be that much. I mean, they don't seem to have. You know, what do you think that is caused by? I mean. Obviously, I mean, I didn't play that much football. From what I did, it's a lot harder to tackle somebody than it is to get tackled. It's a lot easier to block somebody than it is to take on a block, pull off, and then make a tackle. I mean, that takes a while to recover from if you do both of those things in the same minute.
Whether you're playing football, basketball, hockey, soccer, any game where you're, you know, baseball doesn't apply to this, but defense is just much more tiring than offense. And in basketball, you're exerting so much effort playing defense. And on offense, you could almost rest a little bit, and you were excited to have the ball. It almost re-energized you. I think football is the same way. I mean, you're chasing, you're reacting as opposed to, knowing what you're doing going into the play. And I just think it's a lot more tiring.
Well, plus, if the play's going left and you're the right tackle on offense, you're supposed to just, you know, block the guy off or get in his way or whatever. If you're that end, you're expected to pursue it downfield in case the guy, you know, is whatever.
Right.
So it's a huge difference. But I just think the Bears are, you know what's amazing, Manny, is they still, a healthy Kyle Long is still all the difference on that team. He's never going to be healthy again or play for them again probably, but the fact is, he was their dominant lineman.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know if he was ever healthy this year. He was not the same at all this year. So I don't know if he was just not healthy the entire
year,
just got old or what.
I'm talking about last year. He was, you know, other than that, they're the same people.
Yeah, and that's the thing that really bothers me about Trubisky. You know, everyone's like, you can't win with this guy. It's like, no, you can. You won 12 games last year. What happened to him? And in the second half, all of a sudden, he said it was almost like he said, screw it, I'm going to start throwing the ball down the field, and they started moving the ball and making plays. It's like you either have to go to the backup quarterback and just say we're done with him, or you have to like turn the, you know, let him loose and just let him fly. And if he makes a mistake, he makes a mistake, but you gotta have him throw the ball down the field. You gotta have him run. And you can't just keep doing this, you know, these little check down gimmick plays. I mean, it's just not doing it. Last year, the guy was like, what, 20 some touchdowns, 10 or 12 interceptions. He rushed for 5 touchdowns. Like, that was like the 12th or 15th best quarterback in the NFL, and they won 12 games. This year, he's like the 31st best quarterback in the NFL, and you're struggling. You have to get back to what you were doing last year and playing free and easy. Otherwise, I mean, you might as well go to a backup quarterback.
Well, it seems to me that, and I'm not privy to all the films and so forth, but whenever they show the field behind him, he constantly, they must have a book on him, because even if people look open from behind him, He telegraphs to the who's ever watching him where he's going to go, and by the time the ball gets there, There's two people there. He's an interception waiting to happen on anything deep. He doesn't look people off. He hasn't figured that out yet. He follows the guy. So even if the guy gets by, you know, his one person, they always have somebody like in the back playing like a zone, and the safety always moves in the direction he's throwing a ball.
Yet he connected on the 53-yard pass to Gabriel yesterday afternoon. He threw a deep ball to Robinson, who caught it, and then when he hit the ground, it popped out. He threw another deep ball at the end of the first half to Robinson, who caught it, and then couldn't get his feet in bounds, which that's the second week in a row Robinson couldn't get his feet in bounds on a long
completion. He's definitely got the arm.
Well, I know, and I understand what you're saying. There are times when he absolutely telegraphs what he's doing, and, you know, maybe he's just bad, which is very possible. But then there's other times where he's able to get out of the pocket and throw a strike, you know, 40 yards down the field and make plays. And my whole thing is, like, you got to turn him loose and let him play. And if he makes mistakes, he makes mistakes, because what you're doing right now is not working.
But it's not all that unusual. The guys on the Fox game, the guy who was like that, I mean, you'll never remember this, but the guy who was like that when he came out was Terry Bradshaw. He was Terry Bradshaw, his first year or two. Everybody thought they had the wrong guy. Interceptions, you know, throwing the ball right in the coverage, that kind of thing. And all of a sudden, he figured it out. And obviously, the defense carried him for 5 years, and he carried the defense for 5 years. We're talking about Terry Bradshaw was like that when I first got him.
Yeah.
Mark will remember that. Hey, Dr. Blade, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well.
We talked a little football before you filed in, because I wanted you to...
It's easy to underrate Bradshaw. I mean, he had the best defense in football, but he could play.
Well, I was saying...
weapons, I know that, too.
I was saying his first couple of years, he was the draft pick that they shouldn't have drafted. I mean, he threw in the coverage.
Yeah, he did all this.
but then he figured it out. The defense carried him for a while, then he carried the defense for a while.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Because I know you're close to... You were a Pittsburgh
fan. I was a Steelers fan growing up because my dad was born in Pittsburgh.
My dad was from
Mount Latrobe. So he, you know, Mount Lebanon, excuse me. He was, you know, But when I was a kid, you would, like, hide the fact that you were associated with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh, God.
I mean, they were horrible.
And our sad sack buddy Slim was a Browns fan.
We all grew up in that part of the world, Browns fans, because that's what was on television, all the two channels.
Yeah.
It was the Browns or the Giants. I mean, it was sort of the, you know, you're either going to pull for the Giants or the Cleveland Browns.
Well, you were what, Jamestown?
Yeah, Jamestown. Mm-hmm. But upstate New York thinks of itself as a separate state. So things downstate, as they would call it, they would not favor. So Cleveland was physically much closer.
Well, it's like Southern Illinois is mostly Cardinal fans.
Right.
You know, I would say that, you know, the Southern Illinois associates with St. Louis Cardinals more than the Cubs or the Sox.
Yeah, I mean, it's all the geography.
So, hey, what I want to talk to you about today is not so much the people in the politics, but how the society, the minutes that your job, mine, you're being a psychologist, how people's thoughts and how people behave and how people view things sort of have changed. And I've been trying to fish this out, Mark, we've got all kinds of different people on from left and right and whatever, and I try and, I got my new shtick. I didn't get a chance to see you last time everybody was in town.
Okay.
My new shtick is instead of like criticizing one side or the other, I'm trying to figure out, even if somebody makes like the dumbest statement on earth, what did they see that caused them to make the statement? And it's funny that both sides seem to see the same thing and come away with a different view on how to fix it. Both of them sounds pretty dumb to me, but the fact is they both have seen the same issue, and they're just articulating it kind of in a different way. And I guess I don't know what. Just I'll start with the, you know, impeachment part. Not whether guilty, innocent. No, I'm willing to let the process play out as much as you know, whatever people are criticizing the process. I'm willing.
Yeah.
But the thing in 74 when you and I were seniors.
Right? Oh yeah.
Remember watching it a lot. Yeah, but. I mean, I'll be brief. I mean, but Tricky Dick essentially did some bad stuff. They went to the impeachment. They found the gaps on the tape. They basically had the evidence right there to where the senators went to him. Even Barry Goldwater said, hey, I can't go with you on this. And even Tricky Dick himself, you know, saw the evidence in front of him, being an attorney, and I think basically an honest guy, said, you know what, this is too much, too, and he resigned. And there wasn't any of this. But my question is, since then, why... have we gotten to the point where nobody trusts any one of our institutions? Nobody trusts any of our people. I mean, I mean, it's not just this. I go from business to business, and I look at my own. The things that the market is designed on now is essentially kickback and point orders at people. When I started, right. everything was an auction market. You could never pay for order flow. You'd go to jail. Yet now it's all okay. I mean, I think a lot of the people on the right want to ask the question, and I kind of want to know myself, why exactly did the Clintons have an offshore, whatever you want to call it, foundation, taking money from all these governments, when it was obvious the lady was running for office? I mean, I don't know why you as the Attorney General just sit there and look at that and don't do anything. I don't know why the Manaforts of the world weren't prosecuted when our money is going to these other places, be it Republican or Democrat. Don't we have anybody who follows our cash and we send it to places and we got all these carpetbaggers still? I mean, what is the fall down? I mean, I can really, it's not that I agree with them, but I do understand the people that point out this selective enforcement. It's pretty damn selective. I mean, the question is, why are we putting up with that? When I first started the business, the biggest firms were in the NASD, the NASDAQ market site, which is the first electronic thing. It was crooked as hell. Eventually, those people got caught. It took a while. They were the biggest names. They were the guys you didn't go dashing and dying to spank. But eventually, they got them. There was some truth to the thing that even they should have got them after 1 year, but at least they got them after five. There was some, you know, at some point it got so bad that even those guys got clobbered. But now, I mean, when somebody says everything is selective, I don't buy it, you know, in the sense that that doesn't mean Trump's innocent or Hillary's innocent or because the other person did something you should get a lot of. I'm not there, but I also am very aware of what they're saying. It is very selective. Well, how did we get like this? I mean, my question is, are you seeing this in your
people? Well, that's a tough one, Tom. I mean, in a way, it's an anthropologist question or a cultural anthropologist question around I can answer it from my seat as a psychologist, and there's overlap, but it does, I would agree with you, all those things you're naming seem to have happened in, you know, Watergate's a good enough starting point for this. In the psych side, from the general side, this becomes about people's relationship to authority broadly. And it's a very, you know, it's a common developmental arc. It's something psychologists, you know, you get trained to talk about and understand, because we all have to encounter a world outside of us that doesn't always give us what we want. And then you can call this parenting, you can call it socialization, you can call it, you know, growing up, but sooner or later you have to deal with the world doesn't always conform to what you would prefer it to be, and there's people in charge of that aren't you. And that, the erosion of that relationship to authority bases widespread has been talked about in psych for at least 30 or 40 years. You know, you can think about it as breakdowns in families, you can think about disrespect for police, you can think about disrespect for the military, but that's so widespread now that there's this notion that any authority is bankrupt. Right? No one can tell, you know, and it's, as in the developmental art literature, you're talking about a 3 to 5 year old sort of mentation. You know, anyone who's had kids has this charming point where the kids start to tell me, you're not the boss of me. Right? It's that in an adult. And we're seeing this so much now. Clinically, it's every, you know, that judge can't tell me when I'm going to have my kids. Well, actually he is. Actually he's going to. Or that cop can't put me in jail for my third DUI. Well, no, he can. Right? But we don't, I know those are simplistic examples, but boy, when I watch what's happening nationally, it's like, you get whataboutism. Everyone's a hypocrite. Like, you do that too. It's like, but that doesn't make it okay.
Well,
my frustration.
I mean, I know it's Mayberry, but if you go back to small town America, and this is where Kevin and I lack horns, not so much lack horns, because Kevin is actually in small town America. And he's made very positive changes. They threw out the trustees in their town. They got a better contract with the waste people. They got decent, and he's convinced that progress is still possible. In Chicago, you question that, to say the least. But are we not teaching people? Let's just say there's 500 people in town, and there's two stoplights, and there's a speeding, you know, whatever it is. You can, the idea that you get a chance to elect people to these trustees or whatever the hell they are, council, and those people say, based on our judgment, maybe we've had a traffic engineer come in here, looks to us like 30 miles an hour, and of course Main Street is as fast as you can go. And some bleep says, okay, well, hell, the hell with you guys. You don't get to do that. I saw you driving 35, so I drove 45. You got no right. I mean, there's some, if you don't like how the process is, I don't know any other way to do it, to be honest with you. I mean, somebody somewhere, it's like the, it started with the tax. I had people on the air years ago, Matty, you know, when they're bitching about the corporate tax rate. And they're like, they shouldn't pay 35%. They don't pay it overseas. I go, wait a minute. I don't get to say that I'm not paying 35 and sending a half a check. They're coming after me. But those guys are, they're corporations. They should be able to pay what they're paying in Botswana. And I'm going, well, wait a minute. Their place is here. You know, but I mean, I actually would have serious disagreements with people. They'd say, no, they should get to pay the lowest, whatever they feel like paying, because it's too high. And I said, they get the same rights as everybody else, which is to petition your maybe crooked congressman, or change it to 30. You don't get to say it ought to be 30 and send in 30 when everybody else is paying 35.
And this is, again, where I'm, you know, I just can't help the lens I've got. I mean, this is the people who study the development of morals and morality and those sorts of things would, like everything, put epics in your life when your morality is captured by certain notions. So what you're describing, Tom, is the morality of about a 6 to 10 year old, which is, it's fair as long as it's fair to me, right? That's what's fair. You know, if I want the last cookie because I want the last cookie, even though I had the first 11, it's fair because I want it and I should have it, right? That logic works really well when you're a little one. Soon enough, most of us have parents and institutions that start to, you know, make us conform to something that's different than that. But boy, this, for a long time, since the last century, literally, there's been a discussion about prolonged adolescence in American society. Combined with, we have a national history of being sort of favoring individualism, right? We like being nonconformists. We want to flaunt our nose at authority in a certain way. That's a big American ethos. But when you pair that with immaturity, you've got real trouble.
Yeah. World War II changed a lot, because World War II took a lot of people that were teenagers and threw them in a situation where they couldn't be teenagers anymore.
Right. Oh, yeah. They got to grow up right now, you know, with a gun in their hands, standing in 6 feet of water. It's like, yeah. Those people were remarkable. And, I still shake my head about things. How did those people do? Because they were, I know it was a different year, but they were still 19, 20 years old. You know, out of 18.
Well, how is it that
children?
I mean, very general here, but how did that generation seem to do so well parenting, and yet their kids aren't doing so hard?
Well, they, you know, I think, you know, we joke about this when you get around with old guys like us to talk about things your parents said. In terms of parenting, and you know, they could do no pretty well. My dad, and we joke about this line, his best one was, when I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. It's like, you know, we were little then. It wasn't like we were adults when he talked to us like this. But, you know, the idea was that I'm in charge and you're not. And that was just, we accepted that. Yeah. And our mothers were in charge too, by the way. It wasn't like it was just the dad.
No.
I mean, I did not want to have my mother tell my father when he got home something I did that wasn't in line. No. Or the nuns in that case, yeah. Right? But all those authorities worked.
Why does everybody think
were positive to us?
Why does everybody think now that was so wrong to actually be an adult when
I wish I had that answer, Tom. There's a sense that, you know, that generations do things differently to children. There's a kind of permissiveness. I remember even, you know, right out of grad school, this is kind of way back in the 80s, thinking we're going to have trouble if we equilibrate authority in households where children get to dictate the terms of their upbringing. And I see that now more than ever. You know, the kids are, you know, instead, you know, it's so different. You can go to households where there's little kids. We just did this recently. And, you know, it's 7 o'clock at night and the 6-year-old is in bed.
Right? They've had their story. They're going to bed. And they're going to be up in the morning fresh as a daisy to go to school. You got other households, and the six-year-old's up at 10 o'clock watching television because that's their favorite show. You know, and you know where this ends, right?
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't go well. And so I think it really is as early as parenting practices. There's complications there with single-parent families, with two career couples. Everyone has to work now. I mean, they're in a different...
Well, I think a lot of it is economic.
In a different world.
A lot of it is economic. I mean, if you want to see your kids, you got to be up at 10 o'clock to a certain extent.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not all.
Yeah.
I mean, if we come back, we'll talk a little bit about this, because Maddie brought it up, this thing in California with the fires and so forth. SP Futures now up 14, Dow Futures up 124, NASDAQ Futures up 45. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Socks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Jocks.
Starks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Allen. He's Dr. Johnson. He is Matt Weber on the board. S&P Futures up 14 and a quarter. Dow Futures up 124. This is on top of a huge rally on Friday. NASDAQ up 46. Oil up 73 cents. Maybe busting out of this range a little bit. 56.93. Or maybe it's not oil. Maybe it's the dollar. It's the dollar going down, oil going up. That's, you don't know what's happening. These days are much more difficult to gauge. DAX up 151, 1.1%. FTSE up 76, 1%. CAC around up 55, that's 1%. So we're right across the board there. DK, wow, they're down 76. Where'd that come from? Minus 0.3. Shanghai up 17.6. Hang Seng, however, up 446. That's 1.6%. Bonds, 1.75. Again, we're sneaking back up toward the recent highs. Bund minus 0.36. That is definitely one of the, near the recent high. Japan, however, minus 0.18. It got down as low as 0.11, so it's going the other way. Gold up 370, 1515. Silver up 8 cents, 1814. Like I said, we've got oil up 74 cents, 56.94. Brent up 96, 62.62. So that spread is 5 hours and 70 cents. Natural gas 282, up another dime with this weather. And RBOB gas 167. So you could be up, wow, if you cut the bottom on this natural gas, it was 223. It's almost 60 cents in 2 weeks. Well, that'd be nice to be long that one. Not so good to be short. Betty, what do you got for us for heavy weather sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a great start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Our only slow spot is out near O'Hare on the Kennedy as Monday morning business traffic is picking up. But everything else is looking good out there. Coming on the Edens, traffic building on the Eisenhower, but no accidents to report. Same for the Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking good. Same for the suburbs. The only alert we have on the screen right now is that 91st Street between St. Lawrence Avenue and College Grove Avenue is closed due to level 2 hazmat for the high CO readings at 650 East 91st. So that's at a school, Burnside School, and that has 91st Street closed for that investigation. But everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, it's going to be a relatively mild, nice day, partly cloudy skies, a high of 51. Right now it's mostly clear and 46 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 87 today. Right now it's clear and 54. In sports, the Bears dropped their fourth straight game and are now at 3-5 on the season after a 22-14 loss in Philadelphia. Bears fell behind 19-0 in the third quarter, rallied back with 14 straight, but couldn't get the necessary stops as Philadelphia milked out the clock and kicked a field goal with 25 seconds left to ice the game. Bears now dropped 4 in a row, as I mentioned. Mitchell Trubisky was horrible in the first half especially, but not good overall either. 10 of 21, 125 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. Couldn't get anything going. David Montgomery did have 2 touchdowns, but only 2.9 yards per carry. And Taylor Gabriel was really the only playmaker on the field. He caught 3 balls for 69 yards, including a 53-yarder in the second half. Sunday Night Football is the Ravens giving the Patriots their first loss of the season, 37-20. In hockey, Blackhawks earned their first road win, beating the Ducks 3-2. Bulls lost in Indianapolis to the Pacers, 108-95.
Chief. Should have gone up to the Tripoli and laughed our way through the Patriots' loss.
Yes.
The Boston Bar blade. The only problem with me calling you Dr. Johnson, which I don't mind because I've called you that for years, is I still think of the TV show. I still think of the TV show and the other Dr. Johnson, and she didn't look like you.
What's that?
Masters and Johnson, remember the TV show? She was so smoking hot, Dr. Johnson. Whenever I hear the name, I think of her and not you. I don't know if that's normal or not, but, you know, I guess it is. Just saying.
I'm having trouble. I'm getting a spotty connection, unfortunately. I got to walk around the house here. I'm on my cell.
All right.
Anyway.
I have a question for you. In light of what I was telling you earlier, I've had this new idea now, and I'm trying to think twice before I criticize, which is hard to do these days because it's your first statement with some people. Now, the latest this morning was, of course, that Trump doesn't want to give any more money to the fires in California. Now, obviously, you and I know that the guy...
God knows why.
We know none of the history. Just all he knows is that they didn't vote for him. But I actually think that maybe you and I know... little more of the history. I guess my question is, Mark, what happens? The city of Chicago is really good at this. They've got these bridges from that are 80 years old.
Right.
Remember my buddy Bill Moriarty?
Sure.
He's a civil engineer, and he told me one day, he goes, you know, these steel bridges, the way those guys built them, he goes, you may need to widen them or whatever. He says, but if you take care of them, they pretty much will last like forever. And he was the first guy to tell me about how the Gold Gate, they start at one end, they sandblast the hell out of it and repaint it, and as soon as they get to the other end, they start all over again. He goes, the thing will last. Now, I know in Chicago they don't do any of that. And all of a sudden, one day, the thing like gets condemned. They used to do this more under Daily One than they do now. But all of a sudden, one day, the thing would get condemned. They'd run to Washington for money, and because people were connected here, they'd get money for like a new bridge. Because, oh, God, your old one's, you know, a piece of crap now. And I always thought, boy, if I was president, they wouldn't get a dime of that. I'd walk out here and say, when's the last time you idiots painted a thing? And the answer would be never. I wouldn't give them a nickel. Why should other people suck that up? Now, it wouldn't surprise me, and I'm sure our friend in the White House maybe probably doesn't know, or maybe had one conversation with somebody. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the Department of the Interior were to say to the people in California, hey, you know, you got people moving out in these areas, and, where nobody used to be. And, by the way, you got to step up the, you know, thinning these forests out during the summertime when you can, or the spring when they're wet, and, you know, and making sure the ground is clear as best you can to minimize some of this. It wouldn't bother me at all. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all if the tree huggers out there basically told those guys to pound sand, we're not cutting a tree down ever, and all of a sudden they've got fires and want federal handouts. I mean, that would not shock me at all, Mark. So I don't know how you... If that's the case, why is it your obligation to shove money at these guys? I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm saying I don't know the answer. I'm sure he doesn't either, and he's just doing it politically. But what if, you know, why shouldn't there be strings on that money?
You know, the politics that I'm sure are more complicated than I understand. I don't know what the budget constraints are. I don't know if there's a limit. I don't know what, you know, the Fed's responsibility and role is, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I'm thinking back to the piece you started with the first segment, Tom, one of the shifts that, you know, we were asking about what accounts for the change, you know, and I was talking about the authority piece. Another shift that seems very clear is the movement away from the importance of community. Right? Now, you see resurgence of it in a lot of ways, but, you know, the history of the country had all kinds of evidence of favoring community, whether it was civic pride, whether it was fraternal organization, whether it was churches, even regions and states. There was a way in which people sort of saw their community as something they would invest in and pay attention to and put skin in the game. And I think you're right about the, you know, there's a deferring of that community thing where states have said, well, we don't have to deal with this. We'll let Washington deal with it. And now if you don't get yours, you're being cheated. Now, it's ironic to me that often when I hear that kind of stuff nationally, the states complaining are receiving states to begin with.
Right. Oh, yeah.
It's another story.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's like, wait a minute. But do we have a brother? I mean, the old notion is it a brother's keeper society or not? Do we take care of each other?
Well, the people that bitch the most about the Connecticuts and the Illinois and those places that are in deficit financing are during New Jersey, or they're also the states that get less per capita from the federal government. But nobody ever looks. I mean, New Mexico and Arizona, New Mexico especially, you'd say, look, we got a bonus, surplus. Well, of course you do. One in every 100, you know, one in every 10 people works for the federal government, for God's sake.
True.
But nobody ever looks at that. I mean, you know, it is a strange brew, and I don't know how you come to, it seems like we're kind of falling apart, and this stuff is all, to me, it all seems fixable if we could ever just knock off one at a time, and I don't see how we're going to do that. All we're doing is fighting.
I think so too, and I don't want to say despair, but I don't have a swift answer for how do we you know, get both sides to talk. And I try a lot here locally. I have, you know, friends on both sides of the political aisle, at least. And it's like I've tried, this is hard as you can imagine for me. I've tried to do a lot more listening than talking.
I'm trying like, to as
I
well.
I need to know what your position is more than mine, because I, you know, I'm not, that's not going to help. I, you know, just launch into what I think I know and don't listen to you. And it's actually, I've noticed it's made a difference. At least I don't know about how these people on the other side feel, but I've learned a lot. It's like, okay, there's positions in there that can disagree, but I can find places of agreement. And that's sort of what
that's what I'm trying
like
to do too.
Missing.
I'll tell you what, I got my first two or three emails from, the people, you know, normally jump to the right on stuff, which is okay, but with the Boeing jets, with those crashes, and everybody I talk to, and you know, the coffee shops and churches I hang out in, and maybe a bar or two, everybody was convinced that couldn't happen here. Those pilots are idiots, blah, blah, blah. After all, they were Ethiopians and Kenyans or wherever all the other guys were.
Yeah.
And they were just this. And I said, you know, don't be so fast with that. I mean, the might be something with this plane. It's a brand new plane. It's way over engineered for what the size of it was, in my opinion. Let's just see it play out. So, of course, last week I actually had two or three people write me and say, "Chief, I got to hand it to you on this one. You didn't jump to a conclusion. It looks like it was the plane."
Yeah,
and
it was the plane. You said last reports I saw.
Yeah, so he goes, you know, maybe we jumped a little too quick.
Under the bus. I mean, they make, you know, God, you want to look at the planes they make that run well? Sure. It's not like everything Boeing does is bad. I mean, but they had a problem.
But you know,
and they owned it. Good for them.
Well, they have to. They got hundreds of them sitting on the ground. They can't fly. But one of the guys that I met in one of the bars, a pilot, he goes, the American pilots routinely break not necessarily the rules. He said they don't let go of a plane to autopilot till it's a lot higher. He goes, so they probably aren't going to have the problem, but the guys in overseas, they tell you to put the autopilot on when you're 4 feet off the runway. You guys do.
As soon as you can, yeah.
Yeah, and,
so there's some operator-error interaction.
Yeah.
You know, that's actually a good example, Tom, because it speaks to complexity. A lot of these problems that we want solutions to, both the polarized sides have kind of a simple, you know, we have to do this, have to do that, without any consideration for something like alternative explanations, or there's a middle. There's more to this story than it appears, that whole thing.
Everybody had sides right away.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody had sides in an airplane crash that they were nowhere near, but everybody knew what happened.
Right.
Instead of waiting the thing play out. Mark, thank you very much, buddy. Have you back in. Good stuff. I don't know if you fixed the whole world.
Okay.
You at least help with define the problems. John Flanagan, how are you?
I'm good, Tom, and you?
You and Dr. Blade are two ships passing in the night.
It was good listening to him. Thanks for having him.
Oh yeah, well he's but he keeps falling short of solving all the problems.
Yeah, we're just waiting for the climax, you know, when all this would fit together.
If we just
got another part of his life to go to. So.
Oh, yeah, all we need is a big asteroid to kill everybody and start over.
Well, it was a very thoughtful conversation you were having with him, and I enjoyed hearing about, you know, the role of authority and the lack of authority. Or lack of attention paid to authority, and you know there is that, you know, feeling that I sense in, you know, from local to global, that people are distrustful of institutions, whether it's religious institutions or political institutions, that none of these things command the respect or obedience that they used to. The family, it's, you know, you can see the same erosion of respect, or, you know, somebody understanding their position in the whole thing and accepting that and doing what they're told to do. So I'm sure he hears a lot of that in his practice, and it made a lot of sense to me.
Well, yeah, I just, you know, you look at the difference on, I don't know when this all happened, because I'm not a big sitcom kind of guy, but I know when I was real young, I mean, you watched, well, hence the name of the show, Father Knows Best.
His best.
Or you watched, you know, Leave It to Beaver, or any of those shows. They were kind of funny. I mean, the guy that at the end of the day, I mean, what did I remember? What was Beaver's dad's name? Hugh.
Ward.
Ward. Yeah, Ward Cleaver. At the end of the day, I mean, what's it? The wife says to him, "How do you, you know, how is it that you're so good when these crises happens or something?" And he goes, because he says something like, "No real man ever forgets what it's like to be a little boy." You know, and you put yourself in that role again, and you realize how you could easily screw up like that, and here's the way out. You know, I mean, there was a knowledge to the thing that, you know, when you got the two parents together or the guy and the father next door, the problem got solved. And all of a sudden, I'm not saying that, you know, that wasn't, you know, Nirvana, probably was, but then all of a sudden, years later, where the parents are absolute morons. And the 5-year-old is the smart one in the family, you know, and then it's, that's just not the way life is. I mean, young males, if undeterred, will do whatever they damn well please.
Sure.
That's just the way the world is. I mean,
entertainments like that certainly are symptomatic of what's happening around them, and that's why people watch them, but they also become somewhat programmatic, too. I think that they really do influence how, especially when you got kids of all ages watching television, and television has never been so unbuttoned when it comes to situations or language or whatever, compared to what it was when I was, you know, much smaller. So I see how you know, when it comes to modeling behavior and, you know, using strategies to get what you want, you take your cues from what's happening on some of the entertainments that you see or the movies that you see, and it's very hard for you to disassociate that from your own situation when you're young. You try to twist that to suit yourself because that's, you maybe see more of that than you see of that happening in your own home. The parents are working, you know, parents, they don't have the face time with their kids that they used to. So kids, you know, go elsewhere for it, and, you know, it becomes a somewhat, you know, dangerous mix of things when kids without the skill or the brains are making decisions or forcing decisions that they really have no capacity to understand. So,
well, I remember reading this thing about some place in Africa, and it's not about people, but it was some, they decided to repopulate this area with elephants. Now, some of the wacky stuff I read, all of a sudden, they're having all kinds of problems with the young males, and they're like killing rhinos and stuff, kind of for fun, that kind of thing. You know, elephants, if they want to, they can pretty much mess with anything, right? There's not a whole lot of natural enemies for those bad boys. So the guy goes, "Well, who'd you bring over?" And he goes, "Well, we brought over women and a lot of the young males." And he goes, "You didn't bring any of the old males?" The guy goes, "No, why would you do that?" He goes, "Who do you think's supposed to teach the young males how to behave? They're not, you know, because if you don't have an old male around, I mean, it's like, you know, you don't see gorillas in the mist where the gorillas that are 3 years old are pushing the graybacks around. I mean, what kind of chaos would you have? You know, and here, everybody, and you see, even like this shooting in Chicago this week. I mean, this kid who's, what, 15, 16, 17, or whatever he is. I mean, if he should name all the people who are older than him in that gang that told him to do that, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I'd bring back capital punishment, but I'd be real close. I mean, so you don't have the stones to do it yourself. You got to tell some impressionable 16-year-old to go out and kill somebody.
Right.
I mean, we seem to have lost our way just about everywhere, Jan. You know, crime and punishment, everything. I mean, I don't know why. I don't know. Maybe we didn't respect what we did have, or nobody just wants anybody to be told by anybody what to do. I mean, collectively, people have to find a way to live together. And if we all vote on the 40-mile-an-hour speed limit, that means me too. Did you see, Maddie? I don't hear the story. They pull some guy over this weekend. I don't know where it was. Either here in northern Indiana. The guy's doing 132 miles an hour. He's three times the legal limit. Somehow they pull a guy over with that speed. And then the cop says to him, "What were you doing driving 132 miles an hour when you're drunk?" Guess what the guy says?
"What?
I'm a thrill seeker." But what? You know, with no thought of anybody else. He's a thrill seeker. If you get a thrill seeker, go to one of those tracks where they'll rent you a Ferrari and you can drive 160 miles an hour and you'll buy the insurance. And if you wreck the car on yourself, who cares? Why do you do that where other people are around? It's not just about you, right?
I thought myself, and I don't have any real, you know, evidence that I could point to for believing this, but you know, you think of the authoritarian structure of gang culture in Chicago or any big city, and how really enslaved a lot of these kids are.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they, I think part of it, you know, maybe a big part of it, is that there is a need for this kind of supervision and authority, and you take it where you can get it. And there's a sense that I've always had, you know, with some of the crazy shootings that, you know, get the biggest press coverage, that there's absolutely no meaning for them. They have nothing to do with territorial disputes or drug territory, nothing like that. It's just a way of, like, getting points within your gang. If you can do this crime, if you can show on social media that you were the one there and can, you know, give evidence of what happened so that you can be tied to this with some certainty within your gang, that gives you some kind of cachet. It gives you the power to advance within your gang. You get a bigger cut of profits. You get a bigger territory. You get other people underneath you. To me, it's like they're doing what people in a capitalist culture have always done. You know, they do work and they get rewarded for it, and that they gradually can build on this to increase their wealth and their power. But it's gone completely haywire where it's detached from any kind of public good or morality or, you know, the larger questions that people are trying to answer in their lives. So I'm shocked, but I'm not surprised by what I see happening.
What's the Manny? What's the guy? We had him on the show with Dr. J one day years and years ago. Who's the guy from the University of Chicago who wrote the book on gang organization? How it's organized just like a corporation.
Oh yeah, I just saw this mentioned in a review the other day. Oh, I can't think of his name right now.
I think we had him on the show, didn't we?
I don't remember that, but if we did, it's possible. I don't remember.
Or maybe Dan just talked about him for 2 days and it felt like he was on the show, one or the other, which is fine. But essentially, it was the same structure, very very similar to the Capone's gang, very similar to, you know, essentially an organization, and how these people do this, and, you know, blah blah blah. And so that's, you know, I don't think there is. I think you're right. The people get, I mean, especially if you take these areas where the parents all get killed and stuff. Those kids,
sure,
they end up forming gangs.
Single parents or no parents.
Yeah.
There's the only family you have are, you know, your gang associates. And that they provide you everything that you value and that, you know, you respect. So why wouldn't you do their bidding? Why wouldn't you, you know, not think twice about following orders? So that there is, it's not as though the need for authoritarian control has gone away, but the people wielding the power are just, you know, off the radar. And I don't know how you turn things around to get people to follow different leaders when there's no good reason you can point to why they should. So if you're making a living off of one kind of structure, I'd say your best option is to stick with it until somebody gives you a better offer.
Well, that's... Hey, with two things. There's an article here from Annie Nova, CNBC reporter. It had to do with... Evidently, one of the Trump officials is quitting because he's seemingly at odds with the... who's ever in the... Is he educated? Who's the... Secretary of Education and
Betty DeVos.
No, it's his older dude. He was the head of the student loan area. He's convinced that, of course, nobody wants any part of this. Wayne Johnson is the guy's name. He's 67. He's leaving, but he espoused this. I don't know if he's definitely on the Democratic side where he wants to get rid of student debt, but he's absolutely convinced that Fabric America is being destroyed by it. And it's just the way it's being done, the way it's being set up, and how these people got so much. He said people forget, Manny, you might know more about this than me. I'm not accusing you of not paying your bills, but, because I think you did, and you don't have any more debt. So, I know when you have a mortgage, and maybe Jan knows more about this than me, but Audrey will tell me that if somebody doesn't pay their mortgage like 2 months in a row, it's not like the third month you send them a check for 3 months mortgage and you're back to square one. I mean, the amount of late fees, the amount of, they raise the rate, they hit you up with lawyer's fees, even though they can never tell you what exact lawyer spent the hours, right, John? I mean, or what he actually did. You know, it's 4 hours of lawyer's fees, by the way, that's another $2,000. Well, okay, who is this guy? Make it $500 an hour, and what exactly did he do for 4 hours? I mean, you're never gonna win that argument. Evidently, and maybe this is, Maddie's maybe a question for you, does that happen in the student loan group? Because this guy's talking about there's people that have managed to get their balances up to over $1 million. Then that obviously they didn't borrow that much. Is that just because of late fees and stuff like that?
It would have to be.
I mean, do they?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm asking. I have no idea how this works. I mean, John, you and I were too old to have student loans. I mean, when the school was $3,000, you didn't need them. But
I actually did have them, and it was the old Illinois Guaranteed Loan Program, the Stafford Loan, or whatever they call them now. They were low interest. They're financed through your local bank. It was,
did you have them for grad school or for undergrad?
Undergrad. Okay. I had a twin brother. We were both going to.
Oh, that's right. You guys were on the same time. All right.
Okay. Same time. So my parents were stretched, and it was not burdensome to pay them off. And I have been aware of people with crushing student debt, and there are penalties and back interest, and the amount is, it's like getting a bill from your mortgagee, when you've had a default, and then it becomes, negotiating to try to get some of this stuff down. It's pretty much the same thing. The costs can explode if you don't perform on it. It's not like any of this stuff goes away. You can't discharge it in a bankruptcy. So you are just waiting there for this to, dog you, indefinitely. And it gets larger rather than smaller. So,
well, let's talk about this more after the break, Jan, because this is interesting stuff because I don't know how you. Anyway, we'll talk about it after. S&P futures up 13.50 now. We're up as much as 16 when we came in. S&P futures up 45. Still up. Still up after a huge day on Friday. We'll probably stay up. We'll see. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. The Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Well, North Bay Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Chan Flanagan, and Mr. Matt Wilbur on the board. SP Futures up 14, NASDAQ Futures up 46.50. We have been all bullish all day since the Fed came out with their announcement last week. The only stock that's even blinking to the downside here, all Boeing's down a buck, but Apple up another $1.90. Stock's up, it's pushing being up $100 this year. And this is with sales going down. With the China situation, we've got still simmering. I don't know. Boy, I would not have guessed that, but Apple people are happy. The only one in the crapo here this morning is McDonald's down 354. This is if the CEO got bounced for a consensual affair with a coworker. John, we have to get back to our student loan story, but we sure have a different behavioral set for people that are in charge of companies than we are in charge of our government, do we? Don't we?
Oh, man. What happened?
Yeah, really. Now, why aren't there today 10,000 demonstrators in front of the McDonald's office over in the West Loop saying we don't care if this guy was boffing some lady and consensually when the stock's up 50% this year, what do we care? You know,
right?
Where we have certainly if it's a politician we don't like, it's like, or we do like, we're like, hey, what's the problem with that? You know, type of thing. You know, it's interesting how this stuff piles, because Audrey tells me those stories about the mortgages, and I can't believe them. Some of my buddies from the Fed, who I love, but a couple of them are, let's say, to the right of Attila the Hun. Of course, you know, a lot of times when people have, I wouldn't say that, because I like these guys too much, but sometimes when you have the job that is, shall we say, secure, John, is that a nice way to say it?
Yeah.
I don't want to say you can only see your butt because your nose is in the government trough. I won't say that. But their view of what happens to other people in their trials and tribulations is sometimes skewed. You know, I use the term, you need to get out of the limousine once in a while. But, of course, these guys have zero, I use the term, sympathy for anybody who runs up credit card debt. And when I say something like, boy, you know, it's nice that you guys are cutting rates, but it's not following through to the guy who's paying 25%.
Right.
Well, those banks have to charge that much for the people who don't pay. I said, well, maybe those people shouldn't have credit cards in the first place, and that, where do you get the right to charge somebody else because somebody else didn't pay? I mean, how does that slide? Only if you're a bank, right? You have that logic.
Okay.
So I go, well, he says, do you have any idea how many charge-offs there are? And I said, well, I have a reasonable idea, but let me ask you a question. How many people that charge off bank loans or credit card loans through a bankruptcy, which is the only way, right, or you die, I guess, how many of those people more than covered the original purpose or purchase? Like, twice. He looks at me and he goes, well, I never thought of that. You know, I mean, the numbers are so high that, you know, we're at the point here where if somebody borrowed $200,000 for their student loans, and you paid them back four. These bleeps are telling you you still owe us another two, according to this article and this guy.
Right.
And it's a little... I have a family member, unfortunately, that won't go into anything, but other than the fact that he combined his business and his personal stuff, like a lot of sole props do, John, you know that, and they shouldn't, but they do. And then in the midst of all that, had a divorce. So... to say that that didn't work out so well, right at pretty much the top of the cycle of the industry he was in. So, you know, wrote the full check out to the wife and the whole bit and kept the rest himself. And then the business goes downhill and he's on, you know, he starts borrowing on a credit card personally to keep the business going. You know how that goes. Anyway, I'm going to say this is 25 years later. He's still fighting these credit card debts. And my guess is that he probably has paid these people 3 to 4 times the original amount, easy by now, and probably owes more than he did the day that he had the problems.
God.
And at some point, and from where I'm reading this article, I had no idea that this happened with the student loan people. And, this is unconscionable, Jen. It's unconscionable. When you have a guy like this who's, you know, obviously he's probably I'm guessing he's a Republican, but he's like, this is just too much. You know, even though, you know, I walked to school, you know, against the wind uphill and never got a dime from anybody. The fact is, this is too much. You know, and we had the Fed drop their numbers last week. Is anybody we know with a credit card, with a student loan, with a mortgage, if you get a new mortgage, maybe you might get a break because it went down a little bit. Actually, the 10-year went up, so you didn't get a break. Anybody we know got any kind of relief on interest due to the Fed's actions?
No, not that I know of.
No, how could they possibly have?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could be, you know, some dodo and say it should have gone up from 25% to 27% and it didn't or something like that. I guess if you really want to make an argument, you could say that it could even be worse, you know. But, I mean, John, I've done some research since 2008 when the interest rates went to zero, darn near, credit card rates are up. And yet, no, I don't get what we're doing here. I don't really get why we're fighting about the things we're fighting about when other things seem to me. I mean, are we just the people taking the money from government are so involved in taking it that they don't care where you get the revenue? I mean, the teachers here don't seem to care where the revenue comes from to pay them.
Right, they feel they deserve it, and it's not their problem where the money comes from. So, you know, one of the things I've wondered about, and I heard this referred to on your show, you know, several times, that people are really, you know, they're trying to keep up a standard of living that they remember, that they saw their parents enjoy, and they think they did all the right things in order to achieve that. So they went to college, and you know, they worked hard, and they tried to lead a stable life, and you know, not squander their wealth. And make plans for the future and have a family and all the other things that seem like good choices. And that's become so much harder to do now than it used to be. And the easy credit has kind of papered over how difficult it's become. Because people have been able to kind of keep the ship afloat by, you know, borrowing here or a home equity loan there and somehow make ends meet, but it's never something that isn't, you know, a constant threat that the whole thing can completely tank. And the mess in 2007, 2008 hasn't really gone away. The Chicago, from what I know, and probably Audrey has much better sense of this than I do, but I see that the housing market here in real trouble. And I see people's stake in their houses, you know, declining or at best, you know, moving sideways. So they're, as tough as that situation was, Chicago has not come out of that yet, as far as I can see. I can see it in my neighborhood here. And you look at 22-24% interest rates and credit cards, they just, you know, percolate along no matter what. And people are losing the whatever control they used to have over their finances or their financial future. And I'm very concerned, you know, short term, long term. Just looking at Chicago from a very parochial viewpoint here, I don't see things getting better anytime soon.
I would say that and I do talk about it a lot, and it's also part of my ongoing rant against the inflation numbers, is because your education numbers, at least at the primary level, are buried in your taxes, which aren't counted to CPI. So when those numbers, I mean, obviously there is some passing reference, like 5% of your expenditures to higher education. You know, the Notre Dame education, the Northwestern education, that kind of thing, or even Illinois. And high schools, private high schools, those kinds of things. So that, there's passing reference to that by saying passing 5% of the basket. But there's really none to primary in the sense that it's buried in, and I'm gonna say that the reason why the housing prices, and you know, some of your condos and stuff downtown, they're going up, but these suburbs, John, are getting buried.
Yep.
I mean, David, who's on next, was sending me some stuff from, actually, this David talks about it, the tax piece up there, but another David who's a listener to the show and has been forever, writes me a lot of stuff. You can't give away these places in Lake Forest. I mean, not only the demographics, the Maddie Webbers of the world and his terrific fiance, you couldn't give them a place like that. But also, the maintenance and the taxes, nobody wants it. I mean, the prices have been dropping dramatically because of the taxes. I mean, I can tell you, John, I mean, obviously you were in title insurance, you know, I don't know how these buildings downtown in Chicago, especially in the South Loop, which isn't the, you know, but the exchange is pretty much gone, the building we're in. I'm rumor has it, because I don't, rumor, not that I ever whisper in the wind, murmur in the mist, as they say, that 10 years ago, the taxes in this building were 80 grand, and now they're 240. And the CVS just left across the street. They were one of the anchor tenants of the insurance exchange building. The taxes were up to their add-on to their lease were reaching the 20 grand a month number. It was more than the lease, because the taxes were a flow through for 20 years they've been there. I mean, you look at some of these homes. One of my, you know, he's been on the show a few times. My good buddy, attorney friend, lives near North, or what do you call it, River North. And all of a sudden, his taxes hadn't gone up in a while, and then he gets a 30% shot in the ass. And I go, how does it feel to have the price of your home just drop by 15%? Which is what it is. I mean, you can't, the taxes and these condominium buildings, John, how do you pay $800 a month in the condominium fees and $1,200 a month in taxes or $1,500 a month in taxes? I mean, for God's sake.
Right. And, you know, I think this is, one of the incentives why you see, you know, these deconversions of condo buildings like Lake Point Towers, and, you know, it's happening in other places too, where you've got, you know, people selling back their condos and, you know, going into a rental arrangement with an owner. And I can see, if I were a developer or, you know, a real estate, you know, tycoon, that I could probably do pretty well with an arrangement like this if I can get tenants who will rent and feel that they're saving on this tax hit somehow that is completely out of their control if you own one apartment in a 800-unit building or something. A developer can exercise a lot more leverage. You look at, you know, Eddie Burke's firm and other places like that, where if you can negotiate for, you know, a tax bill for one entity, and
not,
you've
not
got
that we know any
political
of those,
connections, you know.
Not that we know any of those guys, John.
No, of course not.
No.
But I can see how this looks attractive to somebody who doesn't want to take a bath on a condo that goes underwater, and a developer who wants to extort as much as they can out of a resident and make them think that they're saving money by renting, because they're still going to, you know, be paying something towards the tax bill on that building, but it's not something that they're personally responsible for, and it's an item, you know, that they get from the assessor's office, so they feel like they've got some protection against that. So I suspect there'll be a lot more of these deconversions, and I'm just amused to see this craze going in the opposite direction from where it was 40 years ago.
According to my architecture buddy, one of these nights I have to get you down to this new place. I stop once in a while. It's loaded with attorneys and architects. It's on a block where all those offices are there. The architects are fascinating to talk to. And one of the guys was telling me it's a demographic thing, where, like, say for instance, Matt's lovely fiance, I mean, she's older now and so forth, but when she moved here right out of school into downtown Chicago 15 years ago, 12 years ago, the the old man, if he had any dough, not that the mother couldn't have any dough, she could. Just not being sexist, I'm just being faster. First thing they want to do is they don't want the daughter living in Logan Square. They don't want her living in, you know, Humboldt Park. They mean on the frontier, where if she's parking her car, they worry about her, you know, walking a block in the hood at 1 a.m. just being on the frontier. So they wanted a building with a parking spot and with a doorman and all that stuff, right? I mean, that's just the way suburbanites are with their kids in the city, especially their daughters and sons. They figure they could take care of themselves. So they would buy these places for these people. And all of a sudden, you know, 5 years later, you get basically your ass handed to you.
Right.
And the taxes are going up and the assessment's going up and you can't give the place away, which I think is part of the problem. So now this guy's telling the daughter, go to this place, pay $2,500 for the one bedroom or the studio, whatever the hell you can get. I'll just give you $1,000 a month. You know, hopefully in 2 years you'll find the boyfriend. You'll whatever. So I'm just writing you a check for $30,000 essentially. I'd rather do that than be stuck with some, you know, horse bleep place 3 years from now that I can't get rid of. And, you know, Audrey tells me about these places out in the Southwest burbs that at the peak of the market in 2007, went for, you know, $225,000. You know, nice condos, nice places. And, you know, nice little areas. Maybe there's a golf course, maybe a whole bit. Now all of a sudden it's how many years later? 15 years later. 13 years later. And, now the place is dated. It needs, you know, a new kitchen, bathroom. It still works. You know, Southsiders don't wreck anything, but it's, you walk in and say, wow, this place is 15 years old, right? So at some point you need new sink, new cabinets, new countertops, and maybe, you know, some new tile in the bathroom, that kind of thing. And then all of a sudden now the tax is twice what it was then. And they're lucky if they paid 2.25. They're looking, if you just, the real number, unless they spend a lot of money on the upgrade themselves, the real number is, you know, 185.
Yep.
You know, 190. I think that's all over the place, Jen. I mean,
it
whatever
is.
Suburb
I
you're
agree.
In, whatever. I don't, downtown, I think you're still okay. West Loop, obviously, you're doing great if you have a piece of property over there because everybody's moving there. You know, all it takes is a Google or McDonald's to drop next door to you. But that happened, it's happened in what? One neighbor to the city. Certainly not South Loop. You know, so, but I think the rest of the people, the taxes have made a dramatic, I mean, the place I live in a four flat. And, I kind of maintain it because I love doing that kind of stuff. And I'm going to say, you know, Audrey says, why don't you buy the place? I said, Odd, if the owner gave it to me, I'd be hard pressed. I mean, it's a 100-year-old building. Even a little bit at a time, I probably got another $25,000 to go before I'm totally happy with it, where every window is replaced, everything, this, that, and the other thing. I said, and stuff goes, stuff that was put in there 15 years ago. And, I said, if I paid no, you know, the rent is pretty decent, you know, I mean, it could be higher, I mean, probably, if I wanted to totally screw everybody, I could raise it up some, but between the taxes, the water bill, and all the other stuff, and the upkeep, there's no way I'm paying a mortgage on like $1 million and breaking even. I mean, we're not even, that planet is long gone, it's past Pluto.
Right, and it is different, you know, economic, you know, climate, say 20, 30 years ago, that would have been a steal for somebody who had some energy,
yeah,
to have a backyard and have tenants and a cash flow and a building you could take pride in, and it was affordable, you know, and the taxes were not obscene. That would have been, you know, that's what kind of kept the city livable, was a constant influx of people who were willing to take on a job like that and to own something and stick with it. Well, how can you sell that, you know, idea now?
Well,
given, you know, what people are looking at, it's just, you know, it only looks like it's going in one direction, and you're getting gouged every year for stuff that you have nothing to show for. You know, you don't get, maybe you get your street resurfaced or a busted streetlight gets fixed, and you're really grateful to get that. But other than that, I don't see my, you know, tax dollar in the city going far to improve my quality of life.
And what's going to happen if when they get that Lincoln Yards in there, and I can't even drive that way. I mean,
right. That neighborhood might as well be a gated community. I think that whole region will turn into something like a theme park, where I'll be like Wrigley Field 2 or something, and it'll be the same kind of people, you know, hang out at those places.
Well, the lack of planning
don't really have anything to do with the rest of the city.
Well, the lack of planning, Jan. It's already the neighborhood is like that area around Children's Hospital. They put up, originally was what, probably three-story walk-ups before there was a hospital. Now, of course, they get the zoning for essentially high-rises. And our buddy Eric May, I mean, he must wander up to Fortin, you know, on the Red Line once in a while, because he's at Columbia College. He probably wants to be in the subway, not in the Ravenswood. But anyway, he says, you go over there, the Fortin L stop in the morning is jammed. He says, you can't get another behind up there, and they're going to put, what, 40,000 people?
Right.
And then Lincoln Yards is going to be 60,000 people. There's not, it's a one-lane street. There's not even a bus line there. There's no rapid transit. And the bridge is a two-lane bridge. I mean, what are you thinking? What are you doing here? Is there any thought? I mean, it was industrial for a reason. You know, the people were there at night.
It's the Finkel Steel.
I mean, yeah, they were there at night.
A thing that functions well in a tract of land like that. And I agree. There's no way that they've got the infrastructure, the public transportation capacity to really make that a very livable place. And all it reeks of is money and very little planning. You know, and what that will do to everybody else who lives within 3 or 4 miles of it is make their life pretty miserable.
Well, yeah, I mean, but you know, you look at what the Fed, and you, I don't know, John, if you listen, and all my media has to listen to it every morning. He probably loves it when he goes out of town. But I rag on the Fed constantly for having the rates at this level, because you screw savers, you overprice assets. I mean, look at the market. Ever since they did this, the market's gone straight up. Now, is that because the market is worth more, or the dollars buying the market are worth less?
Right.
I think it's because the dollars buying it are worth less, you know, or some combination thereof. It's not all of a sudden that Apple's worth $100 more than last year when in fact, their revenue's down, right? So, anyway, but when you think of this stuff, the only argument you could make that the Fed needs to keep it here is because if all of a sudden you went back to, you know, 3.5% federal funds rate and 6% mortgages, and the federal government paying an average of 4.5% for their money rather than 2%, you're talking roughly $500 billion more the Fed pays in interest. Now, of course, where you are now, your citizenry doesn't get any money for their money, which is really screwed up for them. The retired people can't wait to bail out of houses because they can't make any money in a bank or anything like that. So you've absolutely screwed those people. Anybody who's got a saver, anybody who's, you know, got a couple hundred thousand or a couple thousand left in their account at Merrill Lynch or PTI or something. So I put us on the same page. Merrill Lynch or PTI or somebody, you're not making money in your brokerage account. You're not making money at your, you mean marginal. You're not making any money in your bank account. There's no money in the Fed. You're not making any money if you buy T-bills. You know, what, 1.5% maybe. So there's that to it. But right now, what happens if this thing runs back up there? And all of a sudden the federal government is another $500 billion a year, you know, up the behind. And all of a sudden, now granted, the people who are getting that money are going to have to pay taxes on it so you don't lose all of it. But what happens to these housing prices you and I have just been talking about if mortgage rates 3 years ago, 3 years now are 6%? With
sure.
The taxes the way they are, and the taxation has taken what percentage out of people's houses? Now, it's really education. It should be in the CPI. It's not. We're cheating, we're lying, we're not telling people about it, and yet it's relentless, John. It's like cockroach invasion.
Well, and I'm trying to square this with my memories of another strange real estate market in the early 80s when, the first couple of years of Reagan's first term, when, you know, interest rates exploded, and you had 12, 14, 16% mortgages, and creative financing with sellers and everything else, you know, adjustable rate mortgages for the first time ever. And still the market didn't fall apart. Housing values were still going up, and people were able to move properties, and people coming in somehow afforded them too. It seems there wasn't a collapse of value, property sitting on the market unsold for months and months. Somehow that market did function, and you know, I need to go back and read more about what was said at the time to kind of get a handle on why that worked and why things now have really kind of ground to a halt. And I think property taxes are a big part of it. student loan is a huge part of it. People can't come into the real estate market ready, you know, willing and able to make a mortgage payment when they just as soon live in their parents' basement at the kind of, you know, financial future they have. So I there's a lot of different things that make, on paper, the 1980s were a much worse time to begin.
John, I would say that when you go back, what you're going to find, because I've done some of this research, not as rigorously as you would do it, because you know where all the title stuff is and everything, I'm going to say you'll be shocked, because I bought a couple of places back then and I remodeled them. You'll be absolutely stunned at the prices I got for places. I got a three-bedroom, two-bath apartment condo up on right off the lakefront on Addison, and I think I paid 98 for it and sold it for like 120, and I put, 15-18 into the thing. But I mean, I got it for 98 grand, or something along those. I was under 100. So I mean, there's your interest is nowhere near as foreboding when you're buying this stuff around, 100 big ones than 800 big ones. I mean, it's not even it's a whole different program. I bought my home in Beverly for, it was a four-bedroom on two lots. It was 120 or something.
Yep.
I mean, I think the average housing price of a house back then was probably 55 or 60 for, like, in the burbs, the bungalow in the burbs. I mean, or maybe 60. But it didn't affect you near as, if you had the 20% to put down, and your loan was 40 grand, it was still nowhere near like, there's people now that have 40 grand in their credit cards.
Sure.
Paying 25. Type of thing.
And look at their kids' education costs. I'm fascinated at how it isn't that remote in time, because I remember it very clearly, and I was living in the middle of it, and how totally different it is. It's just like an alternate universe to me now.
Well, it was remote from Matt Weber. He wasn't here.
Right.
Jack, that's right. Talk to you next week, buddy. SP Futures up 16 and a quarter. NASDAQ Futures up 57. Come back, Mr. David Andelman. He'll try and pick a top here. Well, he says there might not be a top. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley, just Matt Weber on the board. Mr. David Lamblin here in a second. A little bit behind here because I'm digging out, I think I'm going to add to my Monday report weekly Fed activity report. How's that, Manny? To get everybody all pissed off.
That works.
Wait a minute. I gotta get. All right. The S&P futures, they're up 20 now. Nasdaq futures up 67. We're definitely. We're not gonna. And I don't think we have any problem with this market going to the new highs, because I think we're just pouring so much stuff in here. It's hard to even be conscious about it. But anyway, the individual stocks. Actually, the Dow. It would be up a lot more. The Dow's up 139, and McDonald's is still down $3 as they tossed the president because he was having a consensual affair, and that's all I've heard about him. I mean, there's no details, not that we need any details, but they tossed him out, and a new guy is in that he hired. McDonald's does replace him within. They seem to always have a pretty strong bench, so I don't think it's going to affect them all that much, although the guy who was running it they've done very well under him. So Dow's up 139 over in Europe. We've got DAX now up 166, 1.3%. FTSE up 74.1%. CAC around up 59. That's 1%. Over in Asia, more muted. The Nikkei down 76.3%. Shanghai up 17.6. Hang Seng up big move though, up 446, 1.6%. Bonds 1.76. The Bund minus 0.36. That's a pretty big move up in the Bund. Japan actually going the other way though, minus 0.18. Gold up 240, 1513, so the dollar's a little weaker, which you know should be, I guess, expected, seeing as what we're doing to our dollar. And we've got oil up 58 cents, 56.78, 1%. Matty, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're off to still a good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Traffic building on the Edens and Kennedy, but no accidents to report. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways are moving at normal traffic volumes as well. Suburban tollways have been quiet all morning, so we're off to a good start on a Monday. We do have a structure fire on the south side, Kedzie and 135th. That structure fire is taking place this morning, and that has that area blocked off. But no other alerts on the screen, so we're off to a great start this morning. Weather today, lots of sunshine. Temperatures similar to yesterday, high of 51. Right now it is sunny and 47 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 87. Right now it's clear and 55. In sports, Bears dropped their fourth straight game, losing in Philadelphia yesterday 22-14. Sunday Night Football, it was the Ravens upsetting the Patriots 37-20. In hockey, Blackhawks earned their first road win of the year. They beat the Ducks in Anaheim 3-2. And the Bulls lost to the Pacers in Indianapolis 108-95.
David, how are you?
I'm fine.
If you mentioned early, David, and I'm not going to go through it again because well, whatever, because I already went through it once. I'm saying when the price of a stack goes up, it's either because the value of the stack goes up or the value of the thing buying it's down, the dollar. And I honestly believe that we're going to keep going higher here in the market. It's only because we're going the other way in the dollar. I mean, last week, this is unconscionable. For a week, the Fed's balance sheet grew by $51 billion last week. Money supply growth is up to 8% over the last 13 weeks. What in God's name are we doing?
I mean, you probably know the inner relationships better than I do, but I think the value of the dollar really overall, as far as a market perspective and looking at history, it affects more the multinational, the international companies that, you know, either do business abroad or trade abroad or whatever, then obviously a weak dollar, you know, helps, you know, the exports or the services aspect. But I'm not sure, you know, if you get a domestic-only type of company, that the dollar is that big of a deal.
I'm not talking about...
I think it's earnings.
Let me rephrase. Not the value, quote, of the dollar, the value of it in relation to other dollars or euro dollars.
Other currencies, yeah.
Let's put it this way. If the Fed doubles the money supply in the next 6 months, do you think the rise in Apple is because of Apple?
No, I get it. And we've talked about it. I think it's between, you know, debt and leverage and corporate buybacks. If not, you know, I don't know, but I've come around to your concept that probably many individual stocks that have used that leverage and the corporate buybacks, as well as the liquidity provided by the Fed, which is big time, I think the market in general would probably be 15% lower, maybe 20.
Well, there's 300 million people in this country, and September 11th, the Fed balance sheet was 3769. Now it is, that was 2 months ago. Now it is 4019. So that's roughly $250 billion they've essentially poured into the system and made up, right? They've bought stuff and wrote the check that wouldn't, if you and I wrote it, wouldn't have cashed, but the cash is for them. I'm going to ask you very simply, you and Mr. Weber, how much of that is in your pocket, as the commercial says, and how much of it is in mine? None of it.
None in my pocket.
All right, so at the end of the day, when all this money, they went out and bought all these bonds or whatever, they used to buy mortgages, whatever they're buying, and the money all of a sudden is just splashed into the system, don't you think somebody somewhere, if they bought bonds or whatever, now the bonds are up, is going to say, well, if bonds are trading here, stocks are now a relative buy, let's go buy some stocks with this money.
You have to. And then what we pointed to in earnings yield.
And when you push to the point where, matter of fact, there was a guy this weekend talking about he fears his melt-up. He says right now we're at 20 times earnings. He goes, if we get to 21 or 22, then the reversion, if all of a sudden companies don't do a lot better, the reversion to 16 or 17 is a major market crash.
I disagree. Because if you take 20 and you do the flip and do 1 over 20, which is the earnings yield, it's 5%, it's still pretty decent. If you go to 22 and you do the earnings yield, the flip, 1 over 22, you're at about 4.5. Still double, you know, more than double what a 10-year yields. I don't agree.
Well, the difference between 22 and 16 is more than 5%.
No. What you just said, this analyst or whoever the source is, at 20 it's quote-unquote okay. But if you go to 22, then a reversion to 17 is a must.
No,
I don't agree.
No. The point was, normally we're 16, 17, something like that, whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He says, and we're 20 now, so we're a little extended in his point of view. Now, not horribly or not whatever. So if we correct here, it's kind of no big deal, is basically what he's saying. He's saying the same thing you are. I'm just explaining it wrong. But he says, if somehow or another everybody gets crazed here because the money's easy, and it goes to 22 or higher, and then something flips with the Fed or someplace, and you revert from 22 or higher back to 16. Now it's a major deal.
Oh no, that's true. That aspect is true.
Yeah, I said it wrong. He said if you start the higher you get, further than maybe you ought to go,
no
makes
question.
The reversal more of a problem.
Hey, think back to 2001. You know, 2000, 2001, the .com.
Yeah.
I mean, you had, you know, NASDAQ at 45. You had a lot of high flyers at 60.
Well, how bad, how much, I'm not going to lead the witness here. If the Fed hadn't have poured in huge money for Y2K, how much, in percentage terms, how much lower do you think the top would have been? We still would have been high because everybody loved the .com stuff. And we still would have come down. I think the Fed really exacerbated that with all that money for Y2K.
Being frank, I don't have the memory for that. I don't really recall, but I know it was big, huge. I mean, I can remember Cisco Systems,
yeah,
now looked at it as a relatively safe stock, selling, you know, PEs of 60, 65.
Actually, out of all those stocks that were the high flyers in the QQQ in those days, I still think, David, the only one of them to make back their price is Microsoft. I don't think Cisco was 65, right? It's 47. Oracle
was
60.
What about
Amazon? Amazon was not one of them. Yeah. It was Intel. Intel might have. It was Intel, Cisco, Oracle, Microsoft. Was it Dell? And there was one more. Wasn't Apple.
No.
I'll think of the five. I'll give myself a minute, but don't want to do it on the air.
I mean, Amazon just wasn't large enough to contribute?
No, not in 2000, I don't
Okay,
think.
Yeah, all right, I get it.
It was
still a bookseller.
Yeah, it was definitely Microsoft. It was Oracle, Intel, Cisco, and Dell, I think, were the top five.
You're probably right. Probably only Microsoft.
Yeah.
And look how long that one took.
Yeah, it took, you know, long. I mean, who knows where Dell is now, because it's private, right? It might be.
No, it's public.
Oh, it's back public again?
Oh, yeah.
D-E-L-L. When did he do that?
A long time. I mean, year and a half.
Well, how much money did that guy
make? For a long time, the proxy was VMware, because they were major, they weren't sole owners, but they were major investors and whatever. And it was kind of a proxy for Dell. And then they brought it out public. You know what? I'll put up the chart.
How much more did that?
I've traded it.
How much did that?
$53?
Yeah, so he took it private at what, 13, 15?
Yeah, let's see here.
Boy, talk about the sleaziest move ever. God bless. I think he took it private under 20. I know, David. Was it 15, 16? He brings it back out at 53?
According to my chart, it looks like it's somewhere around 2016, fall of 2016.
When did he take it private? 2012 or something?
Yeah, about 4 years it was. But again, you know, if you wanted to trade Dell, the proxy was VMware.
All right, so let me get this straight, because I don't know the answer to this, and I guess I should. And I'm going to pin it on you. Maybe Maddie knows. The stock's public, okay? So there's an offer, and he's going to buy it all and take it private. So you and I have David and Chief and Matt Weber Fund. And we got 10,000 shares of this stuff. We say, screw you. We're not selling it to you. Now, I know somewhere on the balance sheet, there's a thing that says reserved for minority shareholders or something like that.
Right.
Now, that thing comes public again. Do we get to keep our stock? Now it's 53.
I don't know the exact answer, but short answer with footnotes, I think is yes. I mean, if they bring it back public and you still have a minority share, I don't know that there's an exact conversion, but there's some kind of conversion.
So, but they're liable to say that our certificate that says 10,000 shares, well, the new shares are worth.
That's right.
Those are
the footnotes.
Yeah, they're going to say the new shares are. It takes 10 of the old shares equal to one of the new shares.
Yes.
I got a feeling that with Michael Dell's in charge, we're not going to end up coming out smelling like a rose. I just get the feeling. Not today.
Now, be careful, because I have a client who lives three blocks away. on the same road.
Michael Dell's your client? That's cool.
No, he's not my client. My client lives literally down the same road, three blocks away.
Oh,
they're very, very close, and they love the guy.
Well, I mean, but he took it private, right on the bottom, didn't he? For God's sake. That's scary. And you got the financing.
Hey, how about J.P. Morgan, you know, buying, what, Bear Stearns at $2?
Actually, he ended up paying
$1?
No, but he ended up paying, what, 9 or 10?
Yeah, because the Fed came in and said it wasn't fair.
Yeah, it wasn't fair.
Down from 109?
Yeah, it's a...
Worth 30, we're going to make you pay 9 or 10?
Well, I mean, at least it wasn't General Motors or Kmart where you got Zip. I mean, the guys, and a lot of, you know, the sad part about Bear Stearns, I mean, if you care about anything like that, is I've said this before, I had dinner with, the day that happened, I was a guest at Jim Tyree's table at the Economic Club of Chicago. And of course, Jimmy had, we were second row, David. We weren't with the schlumps, you know. Because the next year when I was a member, whenever I went, I was with the schlumps. I was in the back row. Well, Jimmy, you weren't the front row, but you were second row. And he goes, man, I talked to some of my buddies at Bear Stearns, and they're good friends of mine. They got fired. They lost their job. They got fired. They also, Bear Stearns is one of those places that really, I use the term, encouraged people to have Bear Stearns stock in a 401k.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, so they lost basically their retirement, their job, and half of them lived like kind of in the same town in Connecticut or someplace, and, you know, half the houses were for sale like the next morning.
Yeah, Lehman Brothers. Yeah. I mean, a bunch of them.
Yeah, I don't know about the. You know where Lehman Brothers got their start with that name? What you would guess? You knocked me over forever when I said, Maddie, do you remember how I've told this before? You remember how those guys got their start? They would go. I think they went around in the South. I'm thinking maybe before the Civil War, or right about that time, and sold or bought and sold cotton futures to people in the small towns at the general stores. I would never have guessed that. A New York firm?
Friedman, Ray Friedman and Company, you know, which was huge in the futures forever. I mean, and cattle and hogs, I mean, they were a livestock company. Oh, my God, the principals were monsters in the cotton futures. Monsters. For 20 years. Nobody could get the connection, but it was the origin.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, some of them went down big time for, you know, too many contracts, you're not really a hedger, blah, 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 blah. Many, many, many times before the Merck and the, you know, New York Mercantile joined.
Well, here's one from the past.
I could tell you the story.
I was on the floor out there before the World Trade Center went down, and there were four exchanges on the same floor, right? And they were basically divided. Maddie, whoever, this is the most bizarre thing. You walked out there, it was basically divided by, you know, I won't say chalk lines, but paint lines. It was the New York Merck with the Cotton and Cocoa Exchange. Then there was the...
Sugar
or something.
Sugar and orange juice.
But there were four different... There was the COMEX, which had that stuff. There was the New York Merck. There was the Cotton, Sugar, Cocoa Exchange, and there was a fourth, all in the same spot. Might have been the oil point, or I think the oil might have been the coma, but they were all in the same room. And then the place got wrecked with 9/11, obviously, and then they all kind of split up, right? And when somebody got bought by the Merck, or maybe they all got bought by the Merck.
Yeah, I think all.
All eventually did?
Yeah.
But yeah, you had all those different exchanges, and the Cotton, Sugar, and Cocoa, those guys used to make money. I mean, they were busy.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know how busy sugar could have been, because it was always kind of a controlled substance with the tariffs. But the cotton traded, and...
Well, there was a domestic that didn't do anything. And then the world sugar did have, you know, because it wasn't cornered or controlled. That one was pretty big participation.
What was oil and RBOB was on the New York Merck, right?
Right.
And then, what was the original CMA was the what? The butter and egg exchange or something?
Yes.
Where guys would actually, Larry Bloom, I wonder if he's still alive, his dad or somebody had a thing over there. They'd get up at 3 a.m. in their old junky cars, and they'd drive out the western suburbs, and they'd go to like a dairy farmer, or driving to southern Wisconsin, and they'd get the order and come in the pit and trade it. They actually would go out and how many gallons of milk you got? Okay, you need like two futures, and they'd run in and trade the two futures.
Those were the days.
Yeah, and it's good for everybody, I guess. I mean, yeah. Bizarre world. I mean, I can only imagine what, I mean, cotton had to be, boy, talk about a product that had to be up and down every few years based on too much, too little. Where was the delivery point for cotton, just out of curiosity?
I don't know this. I would guess it was somewhere in the Delta, like Louisiana, whatever.
Before I mention it,
Texas.
The listeners, that the reason why futures prices eventually match up with the, I'll use the term cash price, is because there's always a deliverability to the contract. So if you are short a corn contract, and somehow the spot price might be $3 and the futures trading $4, you can always go buy or deliver your own, you know, a boatload of car, actually a rail car load full of corn, and deliver it. And the size of your contracts are usually, when you say 5,000 bushels of corn, 5,000 bushels is one railroad car, right, David?
Right.
And, because we at PTI, we had a group up in Milwaukee. They used to do some hedging through us years and years ago. And they were a big candy company, David. And, so Dan and I went up there and did a presentation, and they loved Dan because he knew all about this stuff because he'd been on the floor way more than me because he was in the corn pit and so forth. And, so they did some stuff. David, it was a huge company. Guess how many contracts a month?
I have no idea.
Three.
Oh, God.
They used, if you don't know it, chocolate is what? 2/3 sugar, 1/3 cocoa, roughly. Right?
Right.
So these guys used 2 railroad cars a month of sugar and 1 of cocoa. So any kind of advice you gave, it took us how many contracts to pay for the gas and tolls just to go meet with. I mean, these things are huge contracts, you think. So, I mean, even a good-sized farm, I mean, how many car loads do you have? 20? 30? I mean, it's not like it's, you know, a real big
farm. That's why when you start taking down 1,000 cotton futures and declaring yourself a true hedger, skeptics came up.
Yeah, skeptics came out. Hedging what exactly?
Yeah.
The state of Alabama?
1,000. We own Texas cotton fields in Louisiana.
Again, to educate, when you have position limits, on the Board of Trade floor back in the day, now the CME floor, if David and I were a floor trader or somebody who trades through PTI, say, your limit was 3 million bushels. Right?
Yeah.
And, so you're considered to be a speculator or a market maker speculator. In other words, you didn't own a farm and you weren't Kellogg's, basically. But now Kellogg's, because they were, quote, a hedger, they actually were going to buy 30 million shares of corn or bushels of corn for cornflakes over the course of the year so they could, you know, have cornflakes all year long. They could, what they went to the exchange and said, look, we actually need 30 million bushels, so we need for lack of a better term, an extension.
Raise the contract limit.
Or if David and I were lucky enough to own a farm that was the size of Lake County, and we actually had, 2 million bushels or 20 million bushels of corn on our farm, we could go and say, look, the farm's actually this big, or my co-op's actually this big, or my grain elevator's actually this big. They'd say, okay, you get to be a hedger and you get to go up to whatever. But the regular person can only do 3 million, correct?
Right.
And so, I mean, there was method to the madness. I mean,
yeah, this was not a standard, but, I mean, these were kind of the numbers. It was like 600 for, without having to be an improved hedger. And then above 600 to 1,000 contracts, you had to be a designated hedger and, provide proof. If you wanted above 1,000, you had to get extra special, supervision and, inspection.
Well, because, I mean, when you come in with an order that's like 5 and 6 times the position limit of the people you're trying to trade against.
Right.
that's a serious order. It's like if everybody's got a you know, there's 15 market makers trading Apple, and their limit is 1 million shares of Apple, and somebody tries to sell 30 million. Well, how the hell are you going to do that to six people that only have 1 million shares of limit?
Right.
All right, David, you only got less than a minute. Any place we sell it here, or we just try and keep riding?
Technically, you can only sell it on the way down, as I've said, for the last week and a half, and it's going to take a bit because you're looking at an E-mini of 3078, so you have to really get below 3005 to really sell it. The oscillators are getting pretty extended, especially in the S&P and a little bit in the NASDAQ, not so much in the Dow. So I wouldn't necessarily stand in front of a freight train, but, you know, maybe in the spiders, you know, maybe a little bit of a hedge, 5% of the portfolio makes some sense.
All right, buddy, thank you. Talk to you on Thursday.
All right,
S&P futures now up 18. That's as high as we've seen it. As if he's up 59, back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's, get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early. I
got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.